So a year ago, we were talking about the greatest recession since the Great Depression of the 1930s. In the last few weeks, we've been talking about signs that the economy around the world and in the United States is bouncing back. Is that pendulum swing the signal or the noise of the economy and what's going on in the U.S. economy and the global economy? Richard Florida joins us now. He's the author of a book called The Great Reset, How New Ways of Living and Working Drive Post-Crash Prosperity. Richard joins us here in the studio. Good morning.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's great to be here with you guys.
You know, the first question really is, what is the signal and what is the noise in trying to figure out what's going on with the economy? On the one hand, we've had huge sell-offs in the mortgage market, the collapse of much of the industrial economy that we understand here in the United States, particularly the auto industry, yet there are things bouncing back. Are you saying that there are bigger structural issues going on in the economy and that watching this little blip bounce back is missing the point?
Well, when this event happened a year and a half ago, I wanted to take a look at — my dad had lived through the Great Depression and he told me all these stories. I wanted to look at similar events. So I looked at the Great Depression and I looked at the Long Depression of the 1870s and 80s. And one of the things I learned is we understand a lot about what causes crisis. We don't understand recovery at all. And so I went back and looked and tried to figure out what is a recovery. And I came up with this term. Actually, Jeff Immelt had a reset,
reset. CEO of General Electric.
And so what happens is really there are 20 or 30-year events once you have a financial and economic crisis. And there may be some small recoveries or ups and downs. But really to reset the economy and to really grow and prosper again, it wasn't – the story I like to tell is my dad was eight, born in 1921. He was 8 years old in 1929 when the market crashed.
Right.
He didn't buy his first suburban house and participate in recovery, bought it in New Jersey, not far from this studio, until 1960, when he was nearly 40 years of age. Now, to me, as a boy, that seemed like a very short time period, but it was a long time. So for the economy to reset itself takes a long time, and the main point of the book is it's not just technology that resets us. It's not just government spending. You know, Keynesian government spending that resets us or stimulus. It's really new ways of living and working.
Well, the point that you make about your dad is really interesting because even though he lived through the crash, his identity is all about what happened to him during the recovery. Like, for instance, Karen —
absolutely —
in our listening audience writes from Edison, New Jersey. I used to own a 4-bedroom home and pay $9,000 in property taxes annually. Now I live with 3 children in a 1-room apartment for $900 a month. Those changes are irrevocable, and they're happening all over the economy.
Well,
Describe them.
And the book says this. I mean, what we did to power post-war recovery and boom was we spent a whole lot of money on housing and cars and appliances and energy. And that was fine for its time. It was the American dream. We grew our industrial machine, GM and Ford and Westinghouse and Frigidaire. Now we're in a knowledge economy, an experience economy. We almost have to shrink just what she's doing, but shrink what we spend on housing and transport if we're going to build something new.
Page 133. We need to radically shrink our expenditures on houses, cars, and energy to free up spending. This is the positive side for the newly emerging goods and services. We have to have available cash to buy more powerful computers, different kinds of products, and stop spending so much on housing.
We have to develop ourselves as human beings, spend more to learn and educate, spend more on our health and being more physically fit and less obese, but importantly, experiences. You know, when you look at Danny Kahneman's work or all the great psychologists and economists, what really makes you happy? It's not material possessions. In fact, when you scratch your car or your house gets a leaky roof, you get miserable. What makes people truly happy is spending time with friends and purchasing experiences.
Listen to what Connie writes. Connie writes on our Facebook, because this conversation actually about the Great Reset started yesterday on our website. Connie says, we as a family pushed the reset button by not needing to find the best, most expensive, or most exclusive items to buy. On sale and good enough is my new shopping attitude. We make more meals at home and we have leftovers more often too. It's a huge switch in our house. It feels virtuous and healthy to make these adjustments. But you say the story here is the money she saves ends up going into this new creative economy.
Yeah, you know, Herbert Hoover had this funny expression. He didn't really say it. He said, a chicken in every pot and a car in every garage. And I point that out in the book. In order to get a car in every garage, we had to spend a lot less on food. Right? In the 1920s, a family was spending 70% of its income on food and clothes. In order to build housing and cars, we had to shrink the amount we spent on food. Now we have to shrink the amount we spend on housing and cars and energy so we can create these new industries. And like you said, technology, biotech, software, but also all kinds of experiential things that we want, from travel to tourism to consuming art and music, all that stuff.
Education is a big component in the Great Reset. And you describe how education is really where the growth factors are in the economy. College-educated people used to be evenly distributed in the United States. Now they're concentrated in cities like Washington and San Francisco. Around the world, the education and creative community doesn't distribute evenly. No. It's concentrated. They all live together in specific cities, which means there's a lot of people left out.
It scares me because economic equality, and I've been harping on this now for 5 years, economic inequality in America and the world is increasingly geographic inequality. And you have to be mobile. You have to be able to move to escape it. That doesn't mean we can't help older cities, and we must help older cities. We got to help them in a new way. But it really means that we have to wake up to the fact that economic inequality today is geographic inequality, and we really are becoming a class geography in America. And
it's if you can move, you can get by in the 21st century. If you're trapped in your city, you have a real problem. Well, Lisa in New York posts to our site exactly this point. We are closing our business, my husband and I, because of the recession. We've decided to move to a different state and open up another business that we believe will be much better for us. We're changing our location, changing the type of business that we run, and completely changing how we live our lives. That's the lesson from your book.
And stay lean and mean. In a time like this, don't spend a lot. Don't get stuck in a house you can't afford. And if you have to, rent and stay flexible because it's going to be your ticket to a better life.
And the new spending is a ticket to a new economy for the entire globe. Richard Florida is the author of The Great Reset, How New Ways of Living and Working Drive the Post-Crash Prosperity. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, guys. It was great.
If you have a story about how the recession has upended your life for better or worse, let us know. Elaine from Washington, D.C. says, I just got laid off from a not-for-profit. 5 years ago, I saw this day coming, so I went back to school, got a second graduate degree, sold my house this spring. I'm very comfortable scaling down, and I really look forward to working in an area where I've always had an interest but never made the time to pursue it. It's going to be great. You can give us your story at 8778-MY-TAKE or post to thetakeaway.org. You can also go to our website to get a sneak peek at The Takeaway. Check out our blog for a glimpse at what we're working on for the next day and add your 2 cents as well. You can find posts from us, from our contributors and our guests. Check it out at takeaway.org and then just click on blog. While you're there, subscribe to our podcast, Movie Date. Our producer Kristen Meinzer and Newsday movie critic Rafer Guzman talk about the estrogen-filled J-Lo flick The Backup Plan and the testosterone-filled shoot 'em up The Losers. You can hear that at podcasts at The Takeaway.
It's a debate. It's more of a smackdown. It's very, very tense. You're going to want to check out the takeaway.
And we're asking people all day about what they love about their city. Richard, Florida, what's your hometown?
Well, I grew up in scenic, wonderful New Jersey.
And what do you love about it?
Toronto. I love the fact that Toronto's a livable city with families in the downtown core.
That's where you live now, Toronto.
That's where we live now.
Toronto,
but I grew up in scenic,
city.
Wonderful New Jersey.
But they don't get a lot of bad press, Toronto. They're pretty well taken.
They get a lot of movies made there. That's pretty
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, although they're worried now with everybody else trying to dish out money for movies that everybody else is getting the movies now.
I'm Celeste Headlee.
And I'm John Hockenberry. Think about it. This is The Takeaway.
I'm Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, our team has been reporting high-quality news about science, technology, and medicine. News you won't get anywhere else. And now that political news is 24/7, our audience is turning to us to know about the really important stuff in their lives. Cancer, climate change, genetic engineering, childhood diseases. Our sponsors know the value of science and health news. For more sponsorship information, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.